Messer.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Very much. Welcome back. As you know, you're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. Now it's time for our weekly installment of Consider This with my regular co-host, Rob Washburn. Joining us in the studio is Linda Kay, and she is the chair of the United Way for Northumberland. And she'll correct me if I'm wrong on that. We're going to talk about everything United Way for the next hour. Before we do that, just a reminder, you know, what the United Way does and how it supports the community. And we'll get to all of that. But before we do that, here is Supertramp to remind you to give a little bit right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile and show.
Supertramp right there from Breakfast. Oh, no, sorry, An Evening in the Quietest, 1977. Yeah, I was going to say Breakfast in America, but nope, wrong album. And there you have it, listeners. That, of course, brings us to our guest today in the studio, who is Linda Kay. Linda, very happy to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here this evening. A very beautiful evening here in Cobourg.
And as always, Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He is back to school with the kids. Your headache looks like it might be subsiding, Ron.
Definitely.
I would think that'd be exciting to be back to school with the kids.
Absolutely. And it's so fantastic to see them back, and we're all getting ramped up and getting very excited about doing our coverage on QNET News and getting out and learning more about journalism.
Well, there you go. And that's the hard part, I guess, getting the kids and wrapping their heads around what exactly journalism is. It's a lot more than just telling the story, right?
You bet. But telling the story is a big part of it.
And big part about today is we're telling the story of the United Way. And first thing, I want to say this right off the top. I was very, very happy to hear of this huge donation that the United Way got. They announced it at the Showcase of Delectables. It was the announcement of a $450,000 donation from a local citizen for the sole purpose of purchasing and renovating the building at 62 Swain Street. A lot of us already knew that building as George's Music. And now it's going to become the United Way, and something we were talking about before we went to air, because it's right there. They're all in the same neighborhood now. Salvation Army there, the Crisis Center for Women.
The Cornerstone.
Cornerstone. Yep. And so it's sort of a physical embodiment of 211, which is a service that people can get on their telephone if they're looking for information on social services and other services in the community for them that when they need help. The United Way now will be downtown.
Yeah, and we're very thrilled to be moving downtown. It's just, to have our own building, too, is very, very exciting. I think I say to the donor and certainly say to my staff, and we talk about it, just pinch ourselves every day to think that we've had such a generous citizen come forward to give us this donation.
So tell us the story behind finding out about what was happening. Can you tell us how it all came about?
Well, it is an interesting story, and I got to be cautious because I can't give away any information about our generous citizen that's come forward.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just an opportunity to have a discussion with the donor,
mm-hmm.
and we just happened to be talking about the United Way, and we happened to talk about some of the challenges we face today, and also, some of the things, some of the thoughts I've had about how it would be great to have a location where we had a number of organizations together, so it's kind of mm-hmm. a single point of access. And so, over a few months, we talked back and forth. And then one day the donor came to me and said, here's something I would like to do for the United Way. And there's another part of this story, which the donor will reveal a little later, hopefully once our renovations are done. And that is, I'd like to give you the funds to purchase a building. So you'd have your own home and be able to, you wouldn't have to worry about renting a space anymore. And this would be a lasting gift to the United Way. And a very major gift. So it would really help you as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be close to other social services, which is just Cornerstone and Salvation Army. So
did you pick the location or did the donor pick the location?
Well, that was a discussion between myself and the donor, and we ended up at that location.
So there was a bit of strategy then in it. It was just some forethought and consideration as we were talking about this becoming a social service hub.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. My guest in the studio is Linda Kay. She is the chair, director of the United Way here for Northumberland. And Rob Washburn, of course, professor of e-journalism. Now, we've been talking about the new purchase of the property. The renovations are already underway, I understand.
Well, they're just we're just starting to with our renovations. We're just waiting to get our official building permit from the town of Coburg. So we haven't quite started, but we're almost there. We've got all our contractors lined up and such. We're working on that right now.
Now, when it comes to, because you'll own this property, now, how does the town deal with property taxes for non-profit organizations? Do you have any idea on that one?
Yes, I do. We will get a certain amount of a rebate. We get a 40% rebate on our taxes.
So there you go. Okay. And that, again, because, it's wonderful that you don't have to pay rent. But I don't know what the property taxes are. They must be pretty good down there. It is in the Heritage DBIA.
Yeah. But we will get 40% of that back, so that's a nice thing.
How does a donation like this affect the other aspects of your campaign? I know that it's very much a separate donation and does not impact the campaign that'll be coming up very, very soon. You'll be announcing your targets and your team. But is there any impact when people see, like, oh my gosh, look, they got nearly $500,000. Do I need to donate still? Or can you maybe talk a bit about that?
That's a great question. And I think when we have the ability to announce who the donor is and the donor tells their story as to why they gave this very generous gift to the United Way, one of the things I hope it will lead to is other individuals thinking about giving gifts of this type within the community and how, you know, I mean, for us, this is going to make a big difference to our organization for us to have our own building. And, you know, this type of leadership gift only hopes to put the spotlight on the fact that, you know, you can make a difference in lots of different ways to support not only the United Way, but other community organizations.
Well, one of the things that I notice is that United Way, you fundraise on an annualized basis and people donate annually to support the activities that you do. But other nonprofit groups, for example, they often seek these types of legacy gifts and other types of gifts to be part of their mm-hmm. overall fundraising strategy. Can you talk a bit about that being the annual? And do you guys get people who make legacy type gifts or other types of donations that are more long term and larger?
We haven't, United Way hasn't been as involved in getting legacy gifts, but that's something that's we're definitely in our strategic plan to do, is to look at promoting that side of receiving bequests or mm-hmm. legacy gifts. Yes, we've been a campaign that's always been going out on an annualized basis, and we will continue to go out on an annualized basis. But, you know, fundraising's changing for all of us, and mm-hmm. so you have to look at your strategies and what you're doing. I mean, today we have, you know, a very strong leadership campaign that, you know, where individuals are giving over $1,200 as a gift every year to the United Way. You know, that's about a $100,000 plus campaign for us every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with our workplaces changing and that, we have to look at different ways that mm-hmm. individuals can give to the United Way. Mm-hmm. This past May, end of May, beginning of June, we started the imprint campaign, which was to get people giving on a monthly basis to the United Way. And that's something that we are going to continue to grow. And certainly, you know, our annual campaign will happen, as I said, you know, every fall. But, you know, we're doing things all year round, too. Mm-hmm. We're not just, you know, we were known. I mean, when I started in 1989, Ross Quigley was my campaign chair. We kicked off around September 5th or 6th, and we were done by October 27th. You know, we'd raised $250,000, mm-hmm. and I remember I was off to Disney World with my daughter and to have some fun back then in November. So, you know, but now, you know, we're raising funds all year round. You know, mm-hmm. earlier this year, we did the joint fundraiser with Habitat for Humanity for the Toronto Maple Leafs alumni team. And, you know, we've been doing stuff all year round. You know, we're working 12 months of the year to raise funds.
Well, and last year, if I could, because last year's focus was about connecting with the impact.
Yeah.
And it was focusing on the number of families as opposed to focusing on the amount of money raised.
Yeah, that's right.
And how successful was that compared to previous years? And is that something that the chair is going to be looking at this time around?
Well, I think it really got out to the community, the number of people that are helped through United Way and the impact of their dollars. I mean, that's one thing donors want to hear about, is what's the impact? If I give, what's that impact going to be? Mm-hmm. And I think that really brought to light the number of people that are helped through United Way funded programs and services, because certainly it's the organizations that we provide funding to that work with their clients and the families and such to help them through the services they provide. But, you know, I think that was it was a good strategy to get that number out there. It's funny because even though, you know, at the end of the campaign, we announced that number, we also announced the amount of dollars that we raised. But mm-hmm. the one thing people remember more is the amount of lives that we impacted. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we raised over $1 million last year, but that wasn't the focus. A lot of people just talked about the number of people that we helped. So so this year, I think, you know, as we look at we haven't set our final target yet. But we will be doing that in the next week or so. But, you know, when that will have a combination of both, we may do that.
So basically what we're talking about, or what I'm alluding to anyway in this question, is that we're really having a broader awareness now of just how many, not just the lives that are impacted, but truly the nature of how people are struggling here in Northumberland County and what that struggle is. And by focusing on the number of people, as you say, even the people who followed it are still talking about the number of people, because I think for a lot of people, they were shocked. They were genuinely surprised by just how desperate some situations are for a lot of people in this part of the county.
Well, you know, today, making ends meet and meeting those basic needs is a struggle for families. There's no doubt about it. And, I think when you look at, you know, just the cost of your utilities and your food, and look how much food's increased, our utilities are increasing. And, it's a challenge. Gasoline for your car. I mean, right now, gas is down, which is great, but still, your everyday basic needs are, it's a challenge for many, many families. I mean, we just finished doing the Backpack for Kids program.
Right.
And have distributed over 1,400 backpacks out to the community. You know, since we started that program in 2005, 2006, we've done over 14,400 backpacks out to the community. You know, going back to school is very expensive. And, to help families through the backpack program has made a great impact on them. And we get great stories back. And it's so nice because the agencies themselves help us pack the backpacks, and then they're the ones that distribute them to their clients. And I know, we hear great stories of caseworkers going out to their clients and taking the backpacks, and the young people just being so excited to have that new backpack. Mm-hmm. And, it's just made a big difference for families and children and youth out there.
Well, I know the province has said they're going to do something about hydro, but I mean, is the United Way there to help people if they're feeling strapped for? Because again, you talked about food and things like that, but the cost of hydro. I mean,
well, utility
gasoline
programs. Yeah. We work with we receive funds through Union Gas and Viridian, and through we don't get hydro funds anymore. We used to. That's managed out of the United Way in Simcoe County, but yes, so funds come into us. We actually give them to the Help Center, and the Help Center, through their winter warmth program, help individuals with their utilities. So if there's money coming from Viridian, you live in Port Hope, call the Help Center, and they may be able to help you with your utilities through the funds we received. So there are support programs for helping pay for utilities.
One of the other challenges, though, you face is accessing different kinds of resources and different sources of money. And I know that recently there's been some changes at the Ontario Trillium, and there's been some criticism delivered by the opposition parties of the Liberals as to this sort of regionalization of distribution of these funds. Can you talk a bit about that and how that's going to be impacting your ability to raise money or some of the organizations you support?
Well, I don't know if it will impact our ability to raise money. The Ontario Trillium Foundation has been, that was set up originally in the late 80s, early 90s. And initially the funds came from the lottery.
Lottery.
Well, there was Lotario, but it was also, once the casinos got up and running, the province wanted to put, well, I think it started about $80 million and went up to about $125 million. So those funds were to be utilized to be put back into our local communities. And, when it was started up originally, there were so much funds, so many dollars allocated to each community. And so, here there used to be about $700,000 every year go out into Northumberland County to support programs and services in the area. And, over the years, they've, things have changed and how they distribute those funds. Trillium's gone to setting a variety of priorities as well as a variety of investment strategies. And so that has changed, quite a lot. I think now OTF is still, very good at putting money out. It's just now we're in a greater competition for those dollars. And we have seen that over the last even 5 years or more. Trillium, initially when it started, Trillium wasn't oversubscribed as the talk would be. They didn't get enough. Sometimes they just didn't get enough applications for the amount of money that they had to disperse here. Now Trillium's oversubscribed. And part of that is the change in funding levels, even from the province in regards to different programs out there, or the need too has grown. I mean, if you look at the amount of fundraising that's done now and the capital needs, social needs, Trillium's been a big supporter of those over the years. And there's just so many organizations out there that now apply to OTF for funds, and there just isn't the same amount of money to put out.
So do you find that now your organization is receiving more pressure from expressions of interest, other groups that you haven't in the past normally dealt with are suddenly coming to you because there's this vacuum been created through the changes at the OTF?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. This is our first fall for expressions of interest, mm-hmm. and they're due September 30th. And we just don't know what kind of the amount of applications we're going to get. So it's going to be interesting to see what we do get in. But, there's only so many avenues you can go to get money today. And certainly organizations are struggling. And, some organizations are very strong in their resource development and some of them aren't. You know, they just don't have the ability within their organizations to raise lots of money. So organizations like the United Way, who have mm-hmm. been the ones to provide that sustainable funding, and sometimes people don't think about that when it comes to the United Way, mm-hmm. but we have been the backbone of many, many organizations here in Northumberland County for for 47 years, for them to grow and have greater capacity to do things.
Now, you talk about the Ontario Trillium Foundation having gone from a time where they didn't have enough people subscribed to the point where they're oversubscribed.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened for you as well, though.
And yeah,
now,
oh, for sure.
Has that happened at the same pace as OTF, for instance?
Say it happens. It's been happening to us almost every year in mm-hmm. many ways. I mean, last year we really struggled to be able to put the amount of dollars we wanted to put out to the community, and because of the requests that we received. And I think there's always a greater need for funds than organizations have fund to put out.
Could you just take a moment and explain the different systems? Because people who have known your organization for a long time will remember that you used to have a grocery list and every year you would support these groups and for very long periods of time and help them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's now changed recently. And I'm wondering if you could just explain for us clearly how it's changed.
Well, yeah, and you're quite right, Rob. We used to have, a certain amount of organizations that we funded every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so today we call the organizations that we're funding community partners.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a very open process to receive funding. So it's not, so right now you can go to our website and look at the expression of interest, which is due on September 30th.
Mm-hmm.
We've set, we have three focus areas, poverty to possibility, all that kids can be, and strong communities. And under those areas, we have some investment strategies. So you have to be able to fit one of those investment strategies and be a part of one of those focus areas. But, you can look at the expression of interest to see if you may be eligible for United Way dollars. So this is much different than what used to be before, because when we used to have a group of agencies that we supported, those agencies came back to us every year for funding. So there was this historical nature of funding those organizations. So that has changed.
So an organization that may have been funded last year may not necessarily be funded again this year.
Yeah, it all depends if they come to us or if they ask us. In the last 2 or 3 years, we've had organizations say to us, we're okay on our own now. We don't need United Way dollars. Or, we don't really fit your investment, your priorities or your investment strategies. And we've seen a shift in the organizations that we fund. We've been doing grants for a long time, but now we're getting into this, the expression of interest and applications to us. So it's a much different process.
And one of the things you also used to do is you used to provide professional development and training in fundraising and those kinds of things. Do you still continue those kinds of activities, or has that been something that's been dropped?
Well, we haven't done it for the last couple of years. We've been very involved with our Action for Community Change project, which
mm-hmm.
has taken us to where we are today. But that's one thing that I'm looking to reestablish for the community is the leadership development services, because, learning about governance, learning about marketing and communications, learning about things like, giving that professional development is really important for charitable and not-for-profit organizations. today.
Can you give us a bit of an update, though, on the community development project? I know last time you were with us, you talked at great length about the Harwood Institute and the work that you were doing out in the community. Can you bring us up to date as to what's going on with that?
Well, this is what's going on with it, because we've just set all these new investment strategies, and we're in this new process for funding. So we've come to the end of that project, but this is where we're going. We're starting down this whole new road of asking for expressions of interest and under our three focus areas. So that project really helped us to focus as an organization and looking at setting those investment strategies and setting outcomes that we want to see, so that we can show the community the impact of the dollars that we are putting out into the community.
Do you ever worry, though, that some organizations that may have a real need might not get funded because they don't meet your requirement, or they've historically been funded and now all of a sudden they don't qualify? Are you leaving those in the lurch, or are they going to be looked after somehow?
I don't really think we're leaving them in the lurch.
Okay.
I mean, we've been really good at working with all our community partners.
Mm-hmm.
As we've gone through this process, mm-hmm. and as I said, we've had two or three of them that have said, we're fine. We'll go on our own, mm-hmm. but we'll come back to you at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we think, there's organizations out there that have grown over the years
mm-hmm.
that, that are quite solid, have strong resource development.
Mm-hmm.
And so this actually will open up the opportunity for some real grassroots organizations to come to us that may have not come to us in the past. So we're opening new doors with mm-hmm. this new process.
Well, and that's kind of the success story, really, to be able to help an organization get from the point where they're requiring funding from the United Way to the point where they can say to you, you know what, we don't need any money right now. We're good. If we need you in the future, we'll definitely come back. But now it's like developing an entrepreneur relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's got to be extremely warm.
Yeah, I mean, it's very thrilling for us to see that happen. And as I said, we've been the backbone of a lot of organizations mm-hmm. over the years. And I think, being with the organization for 28 years, I've seen a lot of change and a lot of organizations grow. And I just think it's a very positive thing if an organization says to us, hey, we can go off, and it gives us the ability to help somebody else.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the three strategies that you are outlining here and also talk about the upcoming volunteer fair, which is happening on October 1st at the CCC from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll talk about that and so much more. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Rock and roll has got to go.
They're even organizing a group to fight rock and roll.
This rock and roll is the musical noise symptomatic of a decadent and irresponsible youth.
I've been looking into this rock and roll stuff, and believe me, what I see disgusts me.
Tune in every Saturday night at 7 p.m. as we focus on the history of rock and roll. We'll hear from the stars that made it famous and the people who were there from 1952 to 1977. The history of rock and roll right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
It's time for a jailbreak. Ahoy, matey! The Jailhouse Tavern's gone fishing and locked in some great deals for your family every day. Halibut or haddock fish and chips available every day. Monday night is fish night. Get beer-battered haddock and fries with slaw, only $10. And for seafood lovers, there's salmon, shrimp, and fish tacos. Best, biggest patio. Eat in or take out. The Jailhouse rocks. 77 Albert Street. For takeout or reservations, call 289-252-1913 and online at thejailhouse.ca.
Northumberland Security has provided security solutions for over 38 years. From transponder car keys, alarm systems, surveillance systems, and handicapped door operators, they cover Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Northumberland Security prides itself on providing a comprehensive selection of personal and property protection at affordable prices with fast, courteous, and reliable 24-hour service. Located at 22 King Street West, Coburg. Call 905-372-8951 or visit NorthumberlandSecurity.com, the professional security team.
Old Time Radio has a new home. Classic radio dramas, suspense, and comedies. Sunday evenings, 9 until midnight, here on Northumberland 89.7.
Welcome back, listeners, to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. With me in studio is Linda Kay. She is the chair or the director of Northumberland United Way. And Rob Washburn, who is professor of e-journalism and my regular co-host here on our weekly installment of Consider This. Now, you have there's three programs right now, or three right. focuses for
three,
the United World.
Three focus areas for us, which is really poverty, kids, and strong communities. Yep.
Can you talk a bit about each one and maybe explain to the listeners what each one contains and what you're hoping to achieve by sponsoring these organizations in those particular areas?
Well, you know, Rob, you talked about our Action for Community Change project. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we did through very generous funding from the Ontario Trillium Foundation, actually, we went out in the community and we used the Harwood method, which was to go out and actually, you know, talk to individuals. Almost kitchen table type conversations mm-hmm. and get from them their aspirations for the community and their challenges mm-hmm. and such. And through those community conversations, you know, we themed all of those community conversations and really looked at what was coming through as some of the challenges out there or the needs out there. And once we had done all that, we then met with, we had about 30 community stakeholders come in and we talked to them about what we'd heard in the community. So, you know, we're turning outward, we're listening to the community, we're gaining a lot of public knowledge from the community, and we're taking that and looking at what should our investment strategies mm-hmm. be, or what should we be putting our money in to support mm-hmm. the community? So from the national level of United Way, they have three focus areas. As I said, poverty, kids, and strong communities. And underneath those now, we have specific investment strategies. So under poverty, we're looking at being able to assist people with basic needs and food security and life skills and such. Under, we also talk about the risk of homelessness. I mean, you know, we don't see a lot of people on the street here, but we do see people on the street here. You know, people are challenged today to keep a home. As we know, cost of having a rental property or owning your own home continues to rise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, individuals, I mean, transition houses are our only homeless shelter here in the county. And so, you know, we have to look at how we're going to keep people from being homeless and support shelters and supports for individuals out there. And then when it comes to even people gaining employment, you know, how can we help through training programs and such? So, you know, those are some of the things we're looking at under our investment strategies for poverty. All that kids can be, you know, supporting youth and families and learning life skills, inclusion in recreational programs, physical activity for youth, promotion and awareness of mental health. Awareness. Mental health is a huge issue today, and having supports not only for children and youth, but also for individuals at all ages in our mm-hmm. community right. is desperately needed. You know, we have some good mental health services here in Northumberland, and they've grown, but it's still not enough. And access to services, there's still waiting lists. It's still a challenge for people. And just even normative day-to-day counseling, it's tough. And, you know, in today's world, not everybody has benefits. Not everybody has access to an EAP program. So, I mean, and mental health, I mean, getting youngsters into good programs, getting them having a healthy lifestyle, being out there. You know, it's all very, very important, and there's many different ways you can support that whole issue of mental health.
Just before you go on the mental health, do you liaise with other organizations and other institutions to mesh together the various programs that you do?
Yeah, we certainly do. I mean, we're at a lot of community tables, and we certainly work with the county. You know, we fund the Northumberland Community Counseling Center, you know, Lakeshore Mental Health. Yeah, we set a number of tables and which cover these issues. Mm-hmm. And so we can all talk about and look at what services we can provide. You know, looking at the working with Habitat for Humanity, just on the Renew It program that we fund now, which helps to do with home mm-hmm. repairs, right? I mean, keeping people in their home is important. And if there's a small repair that can be done, or, you know, you can fix a roof. I was talking to Megan McDonald about a month ago, and she talked about, you know, we've been able to do, through the funding that United Way's provided, they've been able to do two roofs for mm-hmm. families. We've been able to do insulation for the homes, which helps to keep the hydro bills down. They've built a special ramp for one family. You know, there's a number of different things they've been able to help with, I think it's oil tank removal, you know, things like those. Mm-hmm. So people making sure they've got safe and good shelter is important. And just by doing some repairs like that has, you know, helped families within the community. So, you know, I think today, as I said before, people are really challenged out there, and we've got to look at creative ways to make sure people have a home, have food.
Right. Well, the United Way, you know, you say you're right now you're talking about what is the national strategy, right?
Yeah, this is ours too.
How different is what is required here? And again, because of our rural urban mix than say in the major cities. I mean, you know, the United Way in Toronto obviously has a different priority.
Oh, well, they follow somewhat the same priorities. We have three priorities as a national organization, and these are our three national priorities. I mean, certainly the United Way in Toronto has over, they've just amalgamated with the United Way of York Region. And so, I mean, they're an organization now that probably has about 300 organizations that it funds.
Right.
But they deal with the same things, homelessness, you know, basic needs. They deal with, you know, mental health issues, transportation, which is a huge issue for us. And we think, oh, well, you're in the city of Toronto, transportation's easy. It is not. It's a challenge, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you go across this country, and it doesn't matter which community you go to, you're going to see the same issues. You may see them at varying different degrees.
Right.
You know, the United Way of Kingston just received a huge major gift of $1.2 million to build a homeless shelter for youth. What a tremendous gift from a donor because they have a high youth homelessness there. So, you know, they're really focusing on that. And this donor decided, I'm going to give you money to make sure that shelter's built and it continues to provide support for youth.
Just so the listeners know, the reason I asked that question is because when, you know, I talked to Lou Rinaldi, the member of parliament here, and he's on a number of different strategy cabinet groups, if you will, or groups with inter-party groups and the various committees. And when they talk about poverty here in the rural ridings, and they talk about homelessness and things like that. I mean, he says he has a devil of a time convincing those other MPs, predominantly from major urban centers, that those things even exist out here.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yep. No, I agree with you, and I think it's still an education for people to understand that exists out here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go out to the rural areas. You know, people. It's somewhat hidden in our community, but it exists. You know, people struggle. People struggle to make ends meet. People, you know, poverty exists. I mean, you know, the food banks here, as we know, Northumberland Fair Share Food Bank services, you know, over 1,000, 1,500 people. You know, we look at the Food for All, which, you know, the county, we were instrumental with the county at getting that up and running. And, you know, the county continues to fund that program. But, you know, last year, Rob O'Neill told me, you know, they put out 1.5 million pounds of food and personal care items. That's amazing. You know, and you think in a county, and that's serving breakfast programs, and that's serving the food banks, and it's serving lots of community organizations. But, you know, that's just within our own county. So, you know, that it is, I mean, we have poverty, there's no doubt about it. But it is hidden. A lot of people don't see that.
And I'm sure that's true, especially, you know, you go down to the beach in Cobourg. It's so beautiful. You walk around the lovely streets, see the historic homes, Victoria Hall, you know, Port Hope Town Hall, all these beautiful, beautiful homes. And then it's hard to believe that in behind that, we have these problems. Absolutely.
But, you know, you look at the amazing work that Greenwood's done over in Port Hope, right? And what they've done to help individuals over there and the community dinners that they run and, you know, raising awareness of the issue of poverty and low-income individuals and the supports that can be provided. So, you know, it's just, again, raising that awareness and people knowing it exists in our community.
Well, and we'll have more on that in just a few moments. We're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation with Linda Kay and Rob Washburn, who is my regular co-host here on Consider This Live. You're listening to The Drive Time, Northumberland Radio, by the people of Northumberland, for the people of Northumberland.
Start your week off the right way with a new Lunch Hour talk show right here on Northumberland 89.7. Jeff Kane presents Northumberland Focus Mondays at noon following the news. Jeff and his guests will be chatting about the important issues affecting Northumberland County, personal finance, local business, community events, and much more. That's Northumberland Focus with Jeff Kane every Monday at noon right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
This school year, ask the experts at Long & McQuaid Musical Instruments about starting your child on the right musical path. Come in now to ask about Long & McQuaid's large selection of instruments and accessories. Purchase, rent, or rent to own, all at unbeatable rates. In our music lesson centers, private lessons are available for all levels, all ages, and styles. We offer convenient lesson times to fit busy schedules.
Long & McQuaid, where the music begins.
To long-mcquaid.com for details.
Hi, this is Lane with what's happening this weekend. Thursday at the Port Hope Northumberland Community Health Center. It's a super duper yummy soup lunch served by the Super Sisters. 12:30, admission by donation at 99 Toronto Road. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's the Port Hope Fair. Saturday night, we have the Demolition Derby. Sunday, the Show and Shine Car Show, and a new and improved Midway, all the sights and sounds and tastes of a country fair. Sunday, the Terry Fox Run of Hope is happening across Northumberland, behind the Town Hall in Port Hope, at Victoria Park in Cobourg from 8 to 12 p.m. Weather be kind. Are you a Corey fan? Come out to the Port Hope Library at 6 p.m. Monday night and join the Coronation Ping. There will be trivia, prizes, biscuits, and a nice cup of tea. This is Lane White with what's happening this weekend.
The music you like is the music we play. Listen to Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back. Our guest is Linda Kay. We have been talking about the United Way, all the great works. And you know what? The great thing about having you here is it gives the listeners out there an opportunity to maybe be reminded of some of the things that are really integral to maintaining community development and growth here and ensuring that the lives for everyone is as good as it can be. And, you know, one of the things I asked you during the break was about the breakfast program and any idea on how many kids are being serviced. But now that's available to everyone, right?
Any breakfast programs in the schools, you know, through the Food for Thought and through the support they get from the Food for All warehouse. You know, I last time I talked to Rob, I think they were saying there was about, I thought it was around 1,200 to 1,400 students a day have access to breakfast programs, but I could be off there.
Wow. But still, that is a lot of kids. And again, they say that, right? The breakfast is the most important meal of the day. When I was a kid, I mean, I used to avoid breakfast. I didn't have breakfast most days just because...
Not healthy for you.
I just didn't get into the, it didn't become a habit for me again, because that was, you know, that was the way my parents were out of the house early in the morning. We had to get ourselves ready. So just, we never bothered.
And of course, having a good breakfast in the morning helps you learn better. So
yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, we always got our energy after lunch. Rob, you had a question.
Yeah, I did. With this transition now into these new strategies and these new outcomes, you say you've moved away from the Harwood Institute and some of the conversations you were having in the community. What are you doing over the long term? Because you developed quite a number of contacts and resources, and your approach was very unique in terms of eliciting information and hearing where priorities really were. Are we going to lose that, or is that going to be continued?
Well, really, that's been ingrained within our organization now. So when we start looking at things that we're doing, we always think about turning outward, right? So it's certainly for myself and the staff and even our board, we know what's very important to turn outward. So no, we're not going to lose that, because we want to continue that sort of research, and we want to go back out in the community and have more of those community conversations. You know, we did that about 2.5 years ago. So it will soon be time to go back out there and set up groups and have those conversations once again, because you want to keep doing that. You want to keep getting that feedback. You want to keep listening to the community, because it's really important. We know what's important to the individuals and residents here in Northumberland County.
Because a lot of the times at the municipal level and at the county level, you hear people talking about roads or Ontario Hydro or, tourism and economic development. But we don't hear from municipalities how much they're doing in terms of social services or outreach or the kinds of conversations that you're having to elicit what kinds of programs they need to have. So, you see how important those conversations are if we are to keep our social conscience as a community.
Mm-hmm. And we've had some great conversations with the county lately, and you know they've got some really interesting projects coming up, and they're from the social services side. So you'll probably hear more about those in the next little while. So I think the county is very interested in what we're doing and what we've done in the way of our community impact work, and we've had some great conversations with both Ellen Armstrong and Lisa Horn, and you know. I think, you know, if we all work together on this, it's very, very important because we need to be meeting the needs of the residents here in the county and finding ways that they have access to programs and services. And as I alluded to, you know, transportation's an issue. So how do we make it easy for people to be able to do that? And certainly, Dave, you brought up 211, and that's something United Way, you know, was instrumental in getting going here in the province of Ontario and across Canada. And certainly it's a service, you know, if you're looking for information or help, just call on social services or human services. Just call 211. You know, it's available 24 hours a day, and it's a free service. And it will help you if you're in need of some assistance.
Well, there and there you have it. Now, one of the things you mentioned when we had you before, you're talking about looking outward. And that was something that was a strategy that you guys developed here. Has that been rolled out? Is that a national strategy now with the United Way? I know you talked about that when you were here last time, about how they were looking at it. Is that something that they've decided to climb aboard?
And more United Ways are looking at the Harwood method, including Toronto is looking at it. So, you know, it's something that's growing across the movement. And which is good. Actually, there's a Harwood lab for the first time ever going to be held at Ryerson University in November. Wow. So Rich Harwood is actually coming to Canada to do that lab. And I think, you know, it's quite exciting to think that he's coming here. You know, it's a method that's been used a lot in the U.S. And I think it's it really opened our eyes as an organization and helped change our culture in looking at the fact that we need to be sitting down and having those conversations and hearing from the residents of the community.
So before you go, you got a quick list of upcoming events that people should be aware of?
Well, please come out to Challenge the Dragon on September 24th for our 17th annual Chemical Challenge the Dragon event down at the Cobourg Marina. We have a lot of fun, and we have over 20 teams coming this year to participate in that. And then on October 5th, the Taste of Port Hope will be our campaign announcement. So if you great, great food being put on by the Port Hope and District Chamber of Commerce, $20 a ticket. You can get them from the chamber and for lunch. And lots of great restaurants in Port Hope are donating great food.
And, of course, on October 1st, Saturday, October 1st, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you will be at the volunteer fair to meet and greet folks who are interested in volunteering with some of the 26 various organizations that are going to be there looking for volunteers. And something Jen Crilly and I were talking about earlier today was that we have a lot of people moving to Northumberland, a lot of people moving to the county, a lot of people moving to the town of Cobourg. And one of the best ways to get to know your community, to dive right in, as I like to tell people who move here, is to go to the volunteer fair, because that's going to help you to connect with various organizations that you may be maybe unwittingly interested in volunteering for. Thanks, Linda Kay, for being here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It was a great, great pleasure. Thanks to Rob Washburn. Here are Jefferson Airplane. Yeah, we played it earlier, but here they are with volunteers.